Welcome to Lat B, the only podcast that comes with a free bandits bonus. Lat B, where MMA and UFC get silly. This is the Lat B podcast.
Welcome back. Pay-per-view UFC 240 for ya. We haven't had one of these in a little while on this long streak. We've started to get way more into it as of late. Any hardcore Twitter stuff, universe stuff that we need to get into before we get into this pay-per-view bout? Anything that dropped? We had the Dana White Contender Series ended up happening the other night. We got a couple signatures into the UFC, but I don't know if there's any other big bouts.
I didn't watch it this week.
Interesting. I ended up all missing the first one. I ended up catching the rest of them. There was a big underdog that came through.
Oh,
lengthy
I watched
guy.
Him. I didn't remember too much of it.
There was a knockout there by an underdog. Short notice, 5 days. Can't think of his name off the top of my head, but man. And then the main event, those two guys, surprised neither one of them got the contract. They ended up going to decision. There goes another one. God, this costed me. So, other than that, how have you been since we last met? We had the morning after reviewing it all. Again, a big heavy pay-per-view on the way. A little top heavy, if you ask me. It was hard to do tape this week, honestly. It was hard.
I don't know if it's top heavy. To me, the best fight of the night is like the third one from the bottom.
Maybe once we get into it,
or
I'll come alive.
Or don't hold me to that number, but I feel like it's low. Maybe it's, but it could be the main event of the prelims, and you're like, of course, it's the main event of the prelims.
Right. There's some other ones in there, but it was just some real interesting talent coming from parts of the world that it just seems like we got some setup fights on the way. It is going to be a 12-card bout headlined by Frankie Edgar versus reigning champ at 145 pounds, Max Blessed Holloway. Do you think Mini Blessed is going to be in the crowd?
Oh, yes.
Has he already been at the embeddeds? I only caught the first episode.
I don't think, I haven't looked at anything yet on this fight. I don't think he will be there the whole fight week, but he'll probably get there. I think he stays like the fight and another night. I don't know.
Right. And he usually is ringside where he's even fallen asleep for fight of the year contenders watching his uncle Yancy Medeiros fighting. So Mini Blessed having a heck of a life in there. But it's a narrative that we have to play in the background is I feel like the whole time last time Max fought, he ended up losing. And it was that Mini Blessed crying scene that it's been addressed a few times.
The 155 loss to the diamond.
To the current 55-pound champ. But you know how we always do it here. We go from the bottom to the top. If you want to get
thinking about just starting. I don't know why this didn't blow up. Maybe I saved the wrong one. I'll go back to it. But I thought the canceled or fizzled bouts, that we should always talk about those before each card from now on.
I love those.
And so this fight would have been a lot better with a fizzled bout at 145, Brian Ortega versus Zabit.
Oh, of course. That would have been an amazing
gosh,
fight.
Are you kidding me? I didn't even know that was
an option.
Happened. Yeah. So that fizzled out at 145. But in my opinion, I'm wondering if Ortega's people don't want that fight.
100%.
And the other one that was Barella versus Lauren Murphy. So that one was canceled, but it'll be rescheduled. So those are the two fights that were.
That one doesn't feel like such a miss.
I should have started with that one.
Yeah, there you go.
It wasn't even close. So, yeah, you're like, that, who?
What?
Did you just say something?
Do they fight an Invicta or the UFC? What's going on? So either way, from the bottom to the top, we're going to end up starting the pay-per-view bout. If you're trying to get any type of specific bets going on, you're going to follow me, Manuel, at Zoltanite, at Weakneck Baby for Cheney, at LatBMMA on Twitter, on Instagram as well. We'll be getting some other stuff out there, putting our cards once the week goes on. Keep watching those embeddeds because we tend to get a lot more footage with these pay-per-view cards, and I feel like the main event to me
is dragging it. You would see on an embedded that might change your opinion on betting on someone.
The actual weight cutting process, the meals, if
Staff infection.
Yeah, just like even if their coaches are treating them weird in certain areas, if they're like hugging a fence or a rail around them, just really, I might be overextending there, but I do pay attention to the background.
No, I think everything matters. I agree with you. Right. Even at the weigh-ins, we never like it. If we're just having a face-off and I push you or touch you first, we usually say that person's going to lose.
That is one of our little mythos here, one of our little...
I have one that I just figured out the other night, and it's, I feel like it's 100%.
Oh, interesting.
And I said it before a fight this last fight week, and I can't remember what one happened, but you might remember. I feel like it was one toward the end of the night, and I feel like it was a woman for some reason. And it was, I had the opposite of a lot of people, like maybe the underdog in it even. Maybe not, whatever. That's not neither here nor there. The person who gets down with Bruce Buffer, like the person right. That's in his face. Yeah.
Like TJ Dillashaw.
Yeah. They always lose.
Oh. Interesting. So the people that give that energy back to Bruce Buffer, they
always lose. If you can make a bet still at that point, right. I think bet against that person.
Interesting. You think that's how Bruce Buffer's staying so young? Sucking in all that young life energy?
Oh, that could be it.
Yeah.
It's the Bruce Buffer curse, I'm telling you.
Ooh.
But you know what I think? You're so hyped in that moment that maybe you're not controlling your energy already. You're not controlling yourself. You're not thinking like...
You can gas and you can spike yourself. And then off of any peak, when you scream and flex and all that, the automatic come down is your muscles relax. You dump. And that can cause you to dump. But some of these guys with, you know, a little extra juice in the cocktail tend to run a little bit longer, a la TJ Dillashaw. He could scream all day. He ain't going to get tired because he's got that Russian supplement going on. So all sorts of interesting theories in there. I don't mind it at all. Definitely one I'm going to keep looking for, but definitely a great point. Some other fun stuff that you can always look into. There's always more.
I have scientific ways that I pick my bets, you guys.
Yeah, one of them is with hairstyles. You know how we love those Kentucky waterfalls, those a little American brooks, even though we have a Russian sporting one in here. We have a dirty double debut. It's going to start off the 12th card bout at 265 pounds with debuting Gaikomo Lemons versus Tanner Bowser out of Canada, the 16-5-1 Canadian. Bowser, the bulldozer, comes in as one of these guys that's very, who is it, cheeseburger, freaking fat.
Roy
Nelson, there it is. The cheeseburger lover himself. He's just a 185er who's out of shape. On the tape I saw, he wrestles somewhat, has an overhand right, but at 27 years old, he's fairly plodding and slow. He has fought the better competition level out of both of these debuting guys. He's actually fought guys with a winning record where Como in their freaking Lemons does not have that at all. He's a heavyweight that looks like he's going to probably end up popping for some of that extra foreign Mexican supplement out there, even though he's living in, where is it, Brazil? Oh, so he's fine. He's just on that Brazilian juice, and it looks like it. But he gasses, throws one and two punch combinations. Neither of these guys really shoot. The takedown for them both is rough at best, and the guy to actually move forward to get more of a takedown is gonna be Bowser in there, the bulldozer. So he had, they both gas fairly quick, but I do think Dozer has a little bit longer of a gas tank. Both of them can punch, but really, I didn't like anything I saw from Lemons. He, 2 minutes into the fight against Korean fighters that were losing records that were unbelievable, some of the opponents he had in there, he was making it into dirty splits if he wasn't finishing them. So there's no trust here. This is a clear stay away from that before a reason. But I got to say, in a heavyweight bout, we usually tend to like to play these heavyweights. And I'm still going to stick with heavy to stay away. We did it last week. It worked out.
Yeah.
This week, I think it might go to decision. Give me the favorite, the bulldozer, Bowser. But who are you going to pick in this one and why?
I feel pretty the same way with this, except I think this is a big, huge stay away. And we're also noticing that these guys that they're picking really fast aren't really showing out. Like these quick guys we see in the UFC, they're just not holding up to caliber. you can't just fill it with any fighters. They have to be great fighters. Otherwise, we see these, a lot of these things go to decision, or these hype trains, I should say. Anyone that comes out too hot, they've gotten stopped, every single one of them of lately. So if you haven't done anything inside the UFC octagon, we need to never have those hype trains, ever. They never, ever, ever pay off. I think that could go this way with Bozer as well. So that's why I think it's a big stay away. But I agree with you. Bozer decision.
That's going to turn into a greasy heavyweight fight. Heavyweight decisions don't tend to score a lot unless you're Andre Arlovsky breaking all sorts of records. And these guys don't have that type of pace. So it is could turn into
a snoozer. And is it just garbage and redundant for me to say, you know, but it is a heavyweight fight. So obviously one punch can end the fight at any term.
You're going to save more money staying away from that greasy of a fight there. You're going to end up paying for the -170 favorite Tanner Bozer at 8,500 against Giacomo Lemons at 7,700 plus 140 underdog. Are you going to play him at all? And are you even going to give him a shot?
So. I'm going to pretend it's an 11 card fight night or 11 bout card.
Not a bad idea. Out of the two, if I were to play one, which might be like 0.5%, it'd be Bozer. I don't think there's any way you can play Lemons in this spot either, but that stay away is going to be in full effect. At 170 pounds, we're going to move on to Kyle Stewart versus Eric Koch. This doesn't play for this specific fight because they're both American fighters, but we are in Canada. I don't think that we've got into it. We came in so hot off the press.
Oh, yeah, we were so a mess. You know how we do. All over the place. Grandpa's eyebrows.
We are in Canada. Is it Edmonton? No.
Alberta?
It is Alberta.
Is it Alberta? I think you might be right with Edmonton. I can look that
up. I'm outing myself. Didn't need to either way. The commissions in Canada have tended to be a little bit rough for us. They are some of these bouts. We don't have to worry about it here against Stewart and Koch, but usually there is some sort of ties and they go for the Canadians, end up asking a former UFC fighter, the main himself, Theradoa. He got plenty of those split decisions in Canada.
Will Elias Theradoa be in the crowd? Oh, it's Edmonton.
It is See? Edmonton. Good call. Good save on that one.
No, I think you said it. You said it. I said Alberta.
So, out of Edmonton, we're going to end up having a profile fight here at 170 pounds. Koch used to be a 155.
Edmonton is Alberta. Edmonton Boom! Is a city in Alberta.
You got
it's
it.
Not like
we
Edmonton,
were right.
Canada. It's Edmonton is in...
It's the province. Boom.
Yeah, of Alberta.
So you were right. Good job.
Look, we just said it all together, but doubted ourselves so much and then outed ourselves for how ridiculously
exactly.
retarded. Yeah. R-worded we are. Sorry.
So the American new breed, Koch, is coming in with a 15-6 record, coming off a 2-fight losing streak. Used to be a 155er, has last lost to Clay Guida 2 years ago, and Bobby Green. I think this is his first move up. Koch is one of these guys who has been a veteran. I know he's only 30 years old, but he came in when he was like 20, 21 years old back in the day. So he's the new breed. He's the old breed of the new breed. Because now there's new breeds. We went over this. Either way, Koch had trouble with his chin. He was one of these guys that cuts a good amount of weight. And just in the middle of winning fights, wouldn't be able to take a punch and get upset in there. And Clay Guida was able to get a good pacing on him. The fight IQ sometimes for Koch isn't the best, but all around, he's a jack of all trades, master of none. Good striking. Good takedown defense on the ground if he gets taken down. He has good submissions off of his back and can scramble well. His biggest weakness at 55, though, has been that chin and then just being out-grappled at times. He isn't necessarily super dangerous off his back. So, Koch is in a weird spot right now. Against the 11-2, Kyle Stewart being an LFA veteran, he has last lost his debut against Chance Rencounter at 170 pounds 6 months ago. This is a true 170 pounder. Koch's moving up. Stewart came in short notice, did lose a quick one in there. At 30 years old, out of the Arizona fight team, the tape I saw on him against Rencounter is that he has gaping holes in the wrestling and can definitely get smothered just like he ended up doing to Nardiev in there, did Rencounter. So Stewart has a good left hand. tends to like to keep it striking, a good sprawling brawl. They're both, well, they're not both young enough because Coke's been around forever. It's just whether that Ching's going to hold up here. I don't specifically like anything I see from Stewart that's making me think he should be a really big favorite other than the train has been Eric Coke for a while now. So I'm going to go Stewart decision, but I'm going to probably stay away from this one. I think this goes to decision. I think it turns into just a scrap of a fight. We got to see what Coke does at 170 here. He might give up a lot of size here. I'm going to have to see weigh-ins for these guys and see them actually stand next to each other to get a better feel for this one. I'm going to be tentative all the way around, though. I don't see a definitive favorite anywhere. Who do you have in this fight and why?
I know size-wise, and the bigger guy usually wins. That's what they say. But when the guy tends to go up, we've noticed a lot of success start to happen in the UFC, and that makes me kind of interested in Eric Coke, especially because he has some okay wrestling, especially if, like you said, Kyle Stewart has gaping holes in his wrestling. Bobby Green is a good wrestler, and I think if Eric Coke comes in against Bobby Green, it was who had the better cardio, and maybe Green's age helped out a little there. Green's a great grinder. I don't think that's a bad loss, and I also don't think Rincounter is a bad loss for Kyle Stewart, but dude, Rincounter's huge.
So that's where I'm like, Kyle might not look so small all of a sudden against Coke, who has been pretty much 55 his entire career.
And you know what, the other thing for Coke is every bit of him, it makes me wonder if he wasn't even kind of into this at all, but then he saw Pettis move up to 170 and have a little success, and he's like, oh, maybe I can do this, and maybe he already had a retired mindset, and that makes me nervous. I think the number might be on this, and I want to stick with what I know, but I honestly thought Coke was retired. I thought he was already gone. So I wanted to say the line was off here, but I actually like Chance Rincounter, so I don't think that's a bad loss either. I like both the guy these guys last lost to. I think both guys are up-and-comers in their division. It's just Eric Coke's at 155. So I'm going to go with the heavier guy, and I'm going to go decision right now. I agree with you. If I look at weigh-ins and they look pretty evenly matched everywhere, and it looks like Coke prepared for this for enough time, and maybe that's why he took the time off, was he was trying to get his body bigger, I might be all for Eric Coke because I think his wrestling can actually grind Kyle Stewart down.
I totally agree with that.
I think this is the dirty split.
I think this is going to be a dirty split as well. I wish one of them was Canadian because then I'd definitely be like, all right, I know who I'm picking, but I like what you're saying. I could see myself again switching to Coke. Be sure to follow at Zolt Tonight, at Weakneck Baby, when those cards do come out because it'll give you the final decision there. And if you want to know more information of why we switched or whatever, feel free to ask and let you know what we saw on the weigh-in if it ends up going that way. Anything left with that one? Well, actually, on DraftKings, you're going to end up paying for Kyle Stewart, the slight favorite, $8,200 against Eric Coke's $8,000, the plus 105. Gosh, this is pretty much a dirty split.
Yeah, and I don't see it being a high-scoring fight.
I agree. I think this is going to be a low scorer as well, so I'm going to probably end up staying away from it as far as DraftKings goes.
Oh, and you know, we were just talking about it last week. Pay-per-views tend to have the main event cards. Right now, I'm looking like I'm only playing a main event cards. I might save my money for main event cards. Let's see we'll see how the rest of them
remember play. How I was saying that this was going to be a rough card? Yeah. Exactly.
But it's the fourth fight of the night, actually, that I think is the business.
Definitely. I don't know if it was coming off of that last card where we had like six or seven freaking decisions in a row where I'm just like, I'm a little gun-shy right now. I'm a little gun-shy, so either way, moving on to 125 pounds, we have Jillian Roberts coming out of Port St. Lucie, Florida. Robertson against Sarah Frota. Frota coming in at 125 pounds, 9-1, won her contender series bout, came in to fight Souza and lost a split decision, but she ended up weighing in, 7 or 8 pounds overweight?
She was huge. She was huge.
It wasn't 3 or 4 pounds. It was like 6 or 7. It was still 30%, so might as well. And either way, well, that turned into a split decision. Frota, we know what we're getting with Frota. She moves forward, throws a right, and will stick to 2 and 3 punch combinations there, it could be limited to one a lot of the time in there, but not a lot of head movement. She has a, I wouldn't say a good double, but she has wrestling. She'll go for those takedowns, and she uses brute force to get those type of takedowns over, and it works for her just because she can outmuscle a lot of fighters. But Froda doesn't come at you with any type of tricky game plan. She's not doing sidesteps and hitting you on the outside. She's standing in front of you and banging. She likes to brawl. So we know what we're getting with Froda. On the ground, we haven't seen tons from her, from a lot of people on the ground. I don't know what Froda's exact belt is. So what the fight we did see with Souza, standing, the little bit we saw on the ground, they really didn't do much. And against Jillian Roberts, the 6-3 fighter, is a Canadian, but she is out of Florida, fighting out of American Top Team, getting all sorts of training on that Jupiter Coast and whatnot. Robertson is strictly a submission specialist. She's definitely been a bit spotty in there, coming off of a win against Macedo, a submission, 5 months ago. Prior to that, she lost to Silva via armbar. She can be submitted. She has beat people like McCann via submission, also gotten another win over Whitmire. Jillian Roberts is getting better in her wrestling. Her striking, though, is just still not evolved. Every time I see her, she just half puts her arms up and half throw punches to get to the clinch and make sure it gets to the ground. She'll even pull guard at times, where she's just confident on being on the ground. It can be a problem, though, for against somebody like Froda, because she's strong enough and just bully enough where she will literally just sit down on your takedown and hammer fist you and just land a lot of shots. So I could see Roberts going for the takedown and ending up in a bad stuck position and just kind of riding out the rounds. Though there is an advantage. If Roberts gets around the back of Froda at all, Roberts does have a good enough of a submission game, even off of her back, to be able to throw up those triangles. But striking-wise, there is a solid advantage here for Froda. And if she does any of that bullshit coming in heavy, she's done it before. So we got to watch out for that on weigh-ins. But I'm going to go with Robertson submission right now. Round number two, I think it's a hard first round, and they both start to slow down going into that a third. But I don't think it goes into that third and in the second round. But this is going to be a gut check time. I'm not going to go super heavy on this. I feel like this can go both ways really, really quickly. Who do you have in this fight and why?
Right now, I have Robertson decision. I know she's never gotten a decision. Has she even ever been to decision? I don't know if she can make it to decision, but I know Sarah Froda ain't got no gas. I just question on whether or not Robertson's submissions are better than Froda's. I think it's kind of sketchy. I think Froda has kind of those same submissions and more strength. I just think she has less time to use that ability. I'm hoping the age pays off and Jillian Robertson just putting in the work. Are they both tough house girls?
No. Froda came off of the Contender Series Brazil.
Oh, okay. Jillian's young. She's at the right camp right now. She's probably training. I hope she's training with the right people. I hope she's at the right American Top Team. We know there's 1,000 of them.
She's training with JJ.
That's what I mean. If she's training with JJ and she's staying on the outside and she knows how to point fight well enough and gets her ground game strong, I like Robertson to eke out the decision here, but I'm scared I'm going to stay away from this fight too.
The caveat with that, she isn't JJ's main training partner by any means. She lives on the coast and is in a Top Team affiliate, but I've seen JJ either go up to her camp or I've seen them go down to Top Team and then show pictures of each other. So she's getting that work in sporadically, but she's got a crew of girls on there. I do also have to be tentative and say that I heard Robertson talking about how she's a submission over position fighter, where if she sees a submission, she'll jump on that before position. And I don't like that.
Especially against a bull puncher.
Somebody who will be able to stall out the position and then just start off.
Froda's scary. I'm also interested in what Froda looks like if she actually makes weight. And like you were saying, I question whether or not she will. And I know fight fans don't love this, but if she comes in as big as she did last time, I hope Jillian does not take the fight. I like Jillian's career too much to have a loss to somebody like a 7-pound heavy Froda. Yeah, and remember that about her last win too. You know, like, I mean, I know you said it.
It was a loss.
Yeah.
But it was a dirty split at 7 pounds. So either way,
on like 7 pounds, she wasn't trying it, all the way up until
3 pounds isn't trying.
Yeah,
like 7 pounds, it's like, man, you didn't.
Yeah, like she wasn't even pushing herself, so exactly. The stress on her body was not there compared to the other fighter at all.
So you're gonna end up having the -155 favorite Roberts coming in at 8,600 on DraftKings against Froda's +125, 7,600. Are you gonna end up playing that one on DraftKings at all?
I don't think so. Maybe Robertson has a filler on some.
I think that Robertson's live here for a finish. For that matter, Froda is as well. But I would say it'd be more like 30 to 20% Robertson and like 10% Froda, if any at all. But there is a potential for a high ceiling. There's also a potential for like that turning into a heavyweight decision where they both get 25 points. So tentative. Be really light on that one for sure. Again, this fight card. Not looking so...
No, and then this is what I think.
Then all of a sudden, we have a standout fight for the entire night.
This is the fight of the night, maybe.
This is definitely a fan favorite. We have 125 pounds, Alejandro Pantoja coming in against Divisian Figueiredo.
I don't even know what I'm going to do until I hear your breakdown.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
I think this
is
such a good fight.
This is a great fight.
Back and forth.
But we have seen some glaring holes coming in recently from Divisian. The 15-1 fighter got his first loss ever against Formiga, where if you're following at Zoll tonight, you're getting that free money. I was telling you guys a while ago that, hey, it's that wrestling game you got to worry about with Figueiredo on the ground. We just haven't seen it as much. And he's not a one-punch type of fighter, even though he throws singular punches, but he'll throw like 1 to 3 different type of combinations. So there'll be 2 and 3 punch combinations, but he doesn't really
set up traps. Oh my gosh,
set
look at my
traps.
Record with Divisian.
Figueiredo, 0-5.
I've never picked right on him.
Wow, you've picked against him all but once. Interesting.
So
with Figueiredo, he's being 15-1. The 31-year-old loves to throw that back step uppercut that I love to break down, that we had a whole, what was it, freaking the boxer breaking down back in the day. But either way, when Figueiredo throws that nonstop, you can really see it telegraphed, and he's really relied on those power punches as of late to bail him out of tough spots and even previous fights that he had in the UFC. Joseph Morales being in there against Moraga, those guys were winning fights. And even with Will Brooks was winning that fight with a bunch of takedowns. But the power of Figueiredo lasts into the third round. But that's also because he throws all of his weight into his punches. So that's where we're starting to see the more holes, because now if you just feint him, let him throw that punch, you got an easy takedown. And then on the ground, you're just going to take all day with him. So I see Figueiredo being one-dimensional, as we like to say now. He's started to just, he's never really gotten out of his groove. That's just kind of what he's done. But now that he's fighting higher level competition, that stuff matters. And against Pantoja, he's one of these guys that's been a high prospect for a long time. The 21-3 fighter has had a great record in there, losing only to Dustin Ortiz in the decision, beating Sasaki in a submission, Moreno in a decision where he dismantled him, Wilson Hayes TKO, but Wilson Hayes he's a bit chinny at this point of his career, so I don't think you take much from that. But Pantoja, great sprawl and brawl if he needs to, but on the ground, he's a wicked black belt. Off of his back, he throws up nasty, nasty triangles, great Kimuras, punishes you off of the takedowns as well. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why people have been on Pantoja for a long time, and a lot of people have said he's that newer new breed, and it's true. Off of the Contender Series Brazil, he always stood out at 29 years old. He's definitely the guy with the higher potential. I know Figueiredo's only 31 years old, but the skill level and the growth you've seen out of both fighters, if you both see where they've come in and where they've grown, Pantoja's keeps going, where Figueiredo just has kind of stayed in that mold. So on the ground, distinct advantage, striking advantage, Pantoja. The only thing I really give Figueiredo is the raw power. So anybody that's in there with him has to be careful with that. But I like Pantoja's head movement in there. I think it's a decided favorite for a reason. With all that, though, Pantoja's a scrap, or Figueiredo's always a scrap in there. I don't think this finishes. I think we get a decision in this one, but it's going to be a fun one. I'm pumped for it. What do you have going down?
I kind of was leaning toward a decision as well, but I actually think Pantoja can finish it at the end of round two or round three sometime, because Figueiredo does gas. He does punch hard and he does gas out, and I think Pantoja just has the experience in there to really pay off. I think this is a weird line. I actually think this should be the even fight. It should be 8-8. They don't do that so much on DraftKings anymore, I've noticed. It's hard to find the even fights.
We just had Adams versus freaking Hardy at 8-1, 8-1.
Oh, was it? I thought it was 8-8, 8-2 or something. Oh,
that could be wrong there.
Yeah, I got Pantoja right now. I pick better on him. I never go with the VCN. I always underestimate him. Maybe I'm underestimating him again, but I like Pantoja. Like, the thing that you said that I can't agree with more is his trajectory is just unbelievable. Compared to, like, if you looked at him on a graph, his mountain is growing substantially.
It's steeper by far. Yeah. For sure. And still definitely moving forward there. So he's going to be the -105 against -125.
Neck crank. What's the one where I'd grab your neck and arch my back?
Guillotine?
Guillotine. That's how I picture it finishing.
It can happen, and I believe Pantoja has a couple guillotines on his record in there. A lot of submissions in there, but definitely fun striking, good Muay Thai for both these guys. This is, again, a super profile fight. Really excited for it. On DraftKings, you're going to end up paying $8,300 for Pantoja against Davison Figueiredo's $7,900. How much do you think you're going to be playing this one on DraftKings? Because I think you could have exposure to kind of both guy or either guy, not stack. It can't be a stack, but either one.
Because it's also this 125 division, which I honestly can't believe. Like, if you would have told me this fight's at 145, I would believe it. I don't think anyone would know. The UFC should just lie about it and say, this is two bigger guys. And, you know, for whatever reason that the people hate little guy fighters, this is different. But they throw hands, like, so many compared to any other weight class. They got them lady numbers. They throw that 115 number, that fly weight.
Which, did they just sign a 125-er? I believe they just re-signed Luis Smoka and somebody else at 125 pounds, which we were saying they were going to get rid of it for a while. Well, they were getting rid of some 125ers, but they were wrestling type of fighters. If you really go back and look at it, they're not flashy Artem Lobov types.
Really, what I kind of think is they couldn't, like, what Demetrius was worth compared to what he was worth to them. Sure. Because he was a tenured fighter, he was a veteran fighter, he was a champion with pay-per-view buys. The amount of money they probably had to cut him was probably ridiculous. Because, you know, back then when the UFC probably got grandfathered in, he was before Reebok and all that.
Totally.
So he probably got grandfathered in where he was probably one of the few guys making heavyweight money. Not heavyweight champion money, but heavyweight money, where it was like a few $100,000 to fight. And for little guys, it wasn't worth it if he couldn't sell a pay-per-view.
Right.
They probably couldn't afford him.
So the division's still alive at 125 pounds. And again, this is going to be a profile one. Did you give me an answer as far as DraftKings? What do you think you're going to be playing?
I think I'm going to have Pantoja right now. He's my linchpin.
Wow.
Right now. It might change. But right now, and if you are a new listener, a linchpin is the fighter I will probably have on more of my cards than any other fighter.
Whatever that is. Just a quick note on this fight. It opened at -125 Figueiredo, +105 Pantoja. Now it's actually -125 Pantoja. +105 Figueiredo. The lines have flipped. Flip.
You guys are listening. Just kidding.
Moving on to 145 pounds. We have returning Gavin Tucker against Su Woo Choi.
Oh, speaking of people listening, we called for a fight that totally looks like it might happen.
Ally Kinta, Dan Hooker?
Yes!
100%! We were still saying that before anybody.
It actually looks like it could go down.
Did you actually see Raging Al training in there with the Bagel Bandit himself? Mm-mm. The bagel tall man, or the little man at the bagel shop who got tackled recently? He's training UFC with Ally Kinta now.
Can I tell you something that drives me crazy?
Please.
The schmo.
Oh, I agree with that.
I think it's so cringy to me.
I agree with that.
Like, I'd rather watch Henry Cejudo ballroom dance. It's so, the schmo is cringe. The schmo, I don't think it's hack. And you know how I feel about hack. I need to put that on my fucking my Twitter. I hate, because I have I like and I hate for things. I need to put I hate hack comedy.
Oh, damn. Well, you've been generous. I feel like I hack it up sometimes in this beast.
Sometimes, but not all the time.
True.
And sometimes. If you're hacking, you know it's hack.
On purpose.
It's different.
But isn't that what he's doing?
I don't know. I feel like he's corny or something. There's something about it that is just like...
I agree, though. I'm not defending him because I'm like, nah.
There's something about it that I just can't get down with. So, I'm talking to you, schmo.
Talking to you. At 145 pounds, again, we're going to have some returning fighters. We have.
But I could just, I could love the schmo. Like, everybody's on the schmo hype train.
Really?
No, I don't. I think a lot of people like the schmo.
A lot of people like Brandon Schaub. I don't like him. I've actually seen a lot more people starting to fall off that bandwagon.
Yeah, I do. And then, yeah, I don't really like him. I just get, he's just a dopey, dumb jock to me. Like, he's dopey. Oh, okay. And he thinks he's smart. Like, there's totally different kinds of people.
I agree.
Totally. And Ariel's annoying for different reasons, but I am starting to enjoy Ariel more.
Agreed.
Since he's been ESPN Ariel.
Ooh.
And you know who else that I used to be a hater that I totally love now? Chael.
You did not like Chael at all.
I didn't.
I actually used to really like Chael, and I've fallen back off of a lot of his stuff.
I can't listen to him audio, but I can watch him on YouTube.
Oh, it's that handsome. It's the handsome eyes.
He is handsome. Yeah, but even the sound of his voice in the room, Jules will be like, I can't stand the sound of his voice. She'll know it's him.
Oh, yeah. He is very, very distinct. Very, very distinct. Oregonian affect he has
but
there.
No one's Dan Hardy, just saying.
Just saying. A couple of guys who are Gavin Tucker and Soo-Woo Choi both had fights in the UFC. The 7-2 Choi came in and lost a decision against Musav Evlev 2 months ago. The South Korean fighters fighting the TFC was able to only really find one fight on him so hard, and it was really just him getting flat knocked dead. That only loss he has, it's the only tape study, and it's him eating an overhand right and then dying in the cage for a split second in there. So it was I did get to watch one fight. His opponent, the reason that Choi got takedowns in there is because his opponent jumped for a guillotine out of nowhere. Just jumped for a guillotine, and it's like, oh, okay. Well, that kind of works. So, low level in there. Tends to be a striker, but Choi against Evlev stood in front of him and really didn't do much. He lost a decision simply out of low output, not really setting up too many punches. He'll blitz on you every once in a while. His sprawls haven't really been tested. His on-the-cage grappling was good at best, to where he was able to stop some takedowns, but really wasn't able to stop much pummeling in there. So Choi will stay alive in a fight in there, but unless he gets a type of flash knockout, I don't really see avenues for him winning. I don't see him winning decisions with his low type of output. He can get put on his back foot really quickly, and that's because in his prior scene that he was in, he was fighting guys that were, again, putting down the freaking ice cream scoop and being like, all right, I'm going to fight this guy for $500. And he was just the real athlete in there. So against Tucker, the Canadian prospect in there, he came in on short notice and fought Rick Glenn, lost a decision 10 months ago, ended up taking a little break. He beat Sam Cecilia 2 years ago. Prior to that, he was fighting over on the regional Canadian scene, but Sam Cecilia no longer in the UFC. Rick Glenn, that's a fairly tough out, some Bellator fame in there. Tucker got out-wrestled in those fights, but he tends to be a grinder, hard push, nose forward type of a guy. Has okay takedowns. Against a lot of other fighters, I probably wouldn't be so high on Tucker. And not that I'm high on him now, but he does have some okay striking in there. No real big power, so Choi doesn't have to worry about that. This has a high probability of going to a decision. If it gets to the ground, I don't see Tucker really going in there and submitting it either. I see him more just grinding out a decision with a lot of rabid punches. Out of the two, the more likely to finish is going to be the Tucker with those avenues. But again, I'm going to be tentative on this one. Gimme Tucker against Choi. I just think Choi's a big fade regardless. Unless he turns into a new fighter at 26 years old. If he stays the same old guy I've been seeing, it's a lot of the same with this guy. I think he's set up to lose here. And this is Canada versus the world. That's why I was saying it earlier. And this is, there's a couple of these fights where I'm like, it seems like a setup. This seems like a setup.
Tucker is a wrestler?
He's... out of the two, he's more of a wrestler, but I wouldn't say he's a wrestler.
Where was he at for almost 2 years?
That's what I don't know, if it was a, if it was an injury or suspension.
At his age especially, it makes me nervous. And the other, like, Choi is young, but also Evloev, he's no joke. I think Evloev's one to watch. Like, no one wants to be super excited about him, but that guy's nasty. And to go all the way to the decision with him, that's super impressive. I just don't know where Gavin Tucker has been. And I'm going to go with youth and that UFC experience just 3 months ago to be in that kind of grind. I got to think you can do it again. Going, I have Choi decision. I know he's prone to knockout. I don't like that decision because I do think what you say is any decision is a decision for Canada. I want to think Canada's not like that. They're old school UFC. I want to hope they're old school UFC.
History says no. Canada's one of those
awful decisions.
Some of the worst decisions we get sometimes are out of Canadian cities. They are not in the thing.
Ugh, I got Choi decision right now. I could totally change that, but I just do not like that kind of absence. An almost 2 year absence from the UFC. And he was fighting legit guy. Well, he was only in the UFC for two fights, and then he's gone for almost 2 years. I got to think, yeah. At 33, you retired, and now you're coming back for the money. That makes me nervous. So, Choi decision.
Interesting. On DraftKings, for the slight favorite, you're going to end up paying for Gavin Tucker, $8,400 against Choi, $7,800. How much do you think you're going to be playing that one on DraftKings?
This is where I totally listen to Emmanuel on that, and I think, low output for this guy. If he wins, it's by the skin of his teeth. It's going to be like 60 points for even a win on this guy, maybe 55 points. So I don't think I'm going to play him too much on DraftKings.
As far as Choi?
Yeah, on Choi.
Okay, because I'm saying if there's one to play, it's Tucker, because I see him being the more likely finisher out of the two.
I'm going to stay away from Tucker altogether. I may play Choi on one or two.
Okay, I was thinking I'm going to go like 20% on Tucker because I do see that he could potentially get a finish here. But again, I'm saying I'm fading Choi. I like what you're saying, though. At 26 years old, out of the two, he's the one who can take a dramatic leap in skill.
And I also think markets that are saturated, that they really aren't going to worry so much about getting any fans in, Canada. Like, even if you notice on the amount of fights that are there, the less they're there, the amount of even this fight card compared to the fight cards they used to get, whereas a fight area they want to build up is, I would say, the whole Far East. Like, that's like this right. New UFC area. So maybe it is a setup the other way.
Latin conspiracy on the way. So interesting. Take what you will from that one. It's going to be a greasy night of fights, to say the least. Be sure to bet wisely. So far, my feeling on betting in this one is going to be taking a chill pill. I feel like there's other nights with better favorites, better odds.
Main event card only.
Or main event card only. I do like that one. But we are going to have another fun fight at 145 pounds in Hakeem Duwadu coming in against debuting Yoroshi Hiro. Woo! And it's Dadua, not Duwadu. Dadua in there, Hakeem. Dang, these names got me this week. We're coming in against the debut fighter at 45 pounds.
Duwadu always gets us.
It's not Duwadu. It's Dadua.
Yeah, but I feel like it always gets us.
It always gets us because we read it.
Yeah.
Hori in there at 145 is debuting, coming out of the Pancrase scene. I do believe he has a belt out of Pancrase in there. Tends to be a knockout fighter, a striker in there. He's one of these guys that in the same boat as the previous fighter, Choi, was hard to get a bunch of tape. It was easier to find Choi than his. I think it was only the finish I saw as well. And the only way I could identify him is because of their fight teams linked up with their typology page because their names were in a type of language that I could not read. So it was like, oh, they're okay. I think this, oh, and that's where it finished in a minute, 39 seconds. So it was definitely interesting. The Japanese striker is 24 years old, growing into his own on the takedowns. Didn't really get to see much on the ground. Didn't get to see much. His opponents have been fairly low level. 11-8 type of fighters, 5-2. The pancreas scene does have some veterans, but they can be like 14-18. He's beating Tanaka. I did think I saw a name in there, 12-6 Tanaka 4 months ago, but he limited as well. There's one path, and it's a striker for Hori against Dadua, who is a Canadian prospect at 28 years old, 9-1, only losing in the UFC to Dan Henry in an underdog that I had. Maybe I put a little too much stock into Henry after that because it was a young debuter in Dadua who just got starched. Since then, he's come back in and got a win over Austin Arnett last, beating Bochniak in a split decision. Still a ton of hype from Dadua because he has a type of kicks and punches that'll knock you out. He stuns a lot of people. He'll throw a spinning heel kick and it's lightning fast. It's scary in there how fast he throws it, but they're almost flashy kicks that just kind of warn you because he doesn't really land them that much. It's always, ooh, if that would have landed, he'd be out. But he doesn't land them. He landed him on Bochniak and he wasn't able to get him out of there. And you know how you feel about Bochniak.
But Bochniak, punching bag.
Well, that's what and he got a split decision.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm saying that power, and I don't feel like he has as much power as you wouldn't think initially because he was able to really finish guys on the regional scene quickly. But he's a local favorite. People are going to be going crazy coming in. The only way Hori wins this is knockout. He doesn't go to the cards and even slightly begin to win this, but he doesn't even have that type of skill set at all. As I was saying, as before, it's a setup fight. You got another one in Canada. There's no way that Dadua doesn't win this on the scorecards, but I do think that he potentially gets the finish because they're trying to give him some highlights. I got TKO, round number one.
Whoa! I agree with everything you said, and I got TKO round number two. I know he's a guy that we've seen go to decision of late, but I just think against this caliber fighter, Dadua has so much more experience in there than you would think because he's such a new guy, but it seems like he's fighting every 3 months. I feel like we've seen him three times this year already. I have no idea, but it's just... I'm excited to see him again. I do think this is kind of a setup fight to make him like a scary guy running up the division. And yeah, why not? Okay, cool. Put him on everything.
Hakeem, minus 400, biggest favorite of the night. Also the biggest favorite on DraftKings, 9,300 against Hori's 6,900.
You know how if they say, smoke if you got him, that's what I would call this one. Like, if you can afford it, get it.
That's kind of what I was going to be paying up for because I do feel like that finish, I got a round number one. So I do feel like it's going to be one of those that's going to end up paying off in the long run. To the headlining preliminary of the night, we go to the 125-pound division where we have longtime veteran coming in Alexis Davis versus returning short-notice replacement standout Viviana Arujo. Arujo coming in on short notice within 5 days, moving up a weight class and beating Tidiana Bernardo as a plus 200 underdog via knockout, absolutely piecing that Battaglio in there, Bernardo apart. Great 2 and 3 punch combinations in there, moving forward nonstop. Has the build of a very athletic young woman in Arujo. At 32 years old, she is 7-1. She's only lost to Froda, TKO punches. Froda has a hard right hand, but she just relies on that. But either way, back to this fight with Arujo, she likes to just keep tons of pressure on you. Has a good sprawl in there as well. Is still evolving at 32 years old, but she's just a firecracker.
Oh, this isn't the main card yet.
No,
main event of the prelims. Yeah.
Headliner for the prelims. Huh. So this one is definitely where they're going to get your best ESPN money. This is where you're going to have to be paying the big bucks for. Just because
Alexis Davis is that Canadian.
Definitely. Well, she's got a long... She was fighting in Strikeforce back in the day for a long, long time in there. The 19-9 fighter is coming off a two-fight losing streak. She ended up last losing to Chookagian in there. Also losing to Jennifer Maya in a decision, who we just saw win against Modafferi recently. Off topic, ABC. Amanda Bobby Cooper officially got released. How do you feel about that?
She's somebody that I like her name. I always thought it was fun, but I think maybe just the way you said her name made me think she was going to be good, but she just never got better.
Great point. And I feel like it's justified as well. She didn't really do much to keep her job in there. So that's what we got to say about this one at 125 pounds. But Davis comes in with an all-around game. Tends to be a wrestler, grappler, black belt for a very long time. And that was working against a lot of novice, young up-and-coming women. But we've really seen it as of late that that's not working for the aging 34-year-old. Long time knee, multiple knee replacements for Davis. She's had multiple bouts of bedridden because of that. And she's just not gotten any faster. Her gas tank hasn't necessarily gotten any better. She's not a hard striker. She more arm punches to get you to the ground. And I think Arujo is going to be able to shuck off any takedown attempt. And striking is going to eat Alexis Davis alive. Even if it gets to the ground, it's like I was saying earlier with Froda, I could see Arujo just sprawling and landing hammer fists to gain points. I think Arujo actually rolls here pretty decidedly.
Did she come in enormous for her last fight too?
No.
6 pounds heavy? Or did she come in 4 pounds light for 135?
She came in 4 pounds light.
Okay.
Because she moved up. Yeah, she moved up to 35 on short notice because she came in because... Bernardo's had two opponents fall out weeks before she came in, moved up. But at 25 now, on top of that, she's going to be, yeah, I think that this is easy, easy one to be in Arujo's corner. Give me the decided minus 275 favorite. A lot of people see what I'm seeing. Huh. Who do you have in this fight and why?
Gosh, I want to go with Alexis Davis eking out the split, especially if you think it's going to go to decision, because I think she's going to be such the hype hometown favorite that if they can give it to her, she will. And I also think if she can survive the onslaught of the early first round, she can survive the whole fight and kind of do enough to maybe eke out that decision. She's weathered, she's worn in, she's been in there with everyone. Give me Alexis Davis as the weird underdog. I won't go heavy on it, but neither, I don't see it being a finish.
Interesting. I actually do. I am going to go with the favorite TKO round number two. I think Davis, it makes a valiant effort, but she's not going to want any more of that the further the fight goes on. And we saw Arujo be able to keep that pace up in that last fight into the third round. 9,100 for the decided favorite against Davis is 7,100.
She wasn't cut either.
True, which we've been saying maybe it doesn't help the stability of that chin. But Alexis Davis has never been a power puncher, ever.
Ever. I mean cardio. I think cardio more than chin. I think cardio, for women especially, I think cardio more than chin. And I just, you know.
How much do you think you're going to end up playing Alexis Davis for 7,100?
I might even change this. This could be my number one that I'm talking a big game now. I could see myself putting her on a card today, Alexis Davis. I think she's a good underdog to have. And when people come in under weird things on short notice like that, I call it the Nardiev.
Ooh.
I'm like, sometimes it comes out hot, like the same way it's like beginner's luck.
Hernandez.
Yeah, it's like sometimes you come out white hot because you have zero to lose.
Expectation.
Like literally zero to lose. Now you're in the UFC. And sometimes it's harder to hold on to that. Alexis Davis ain't worried about that. Hometown crowd, what? It adds to her. She might have two baby daddies in the crowd. I don't know.
Dang.
Alexis Davis seems like that. she seems like she's going to get off and go bartend at a dive bar.
I totally could see that. Totally.
And be the bouncer.
Yep.
So I got Alexis Davis' decision. Oh, that's...
7-1, how much do you think? Because I think I'm going to play Arujo on 30 to 40% if she's high up there. I think I'm going to be highly owned in that one as well.
Wow. Yeah, I will not. I will not, but I will play both women, and I could even see myself going, but I will definitely have my E card, which is where I just bet fighters that you're heavy on, and...
Sometimes they work out.
Sometimes it's leverage.
Definitely.
Leverage.
If you're not following, be sure to follow us at @LatBMMA on Twitter, @LatB_MMA on Instagram.
I think we're _MMA on both.
Oh, I'll have to keep saying that. Nope, I believe you're right. I just forgot myself there for a second.
I forgot myself.
Either way, you can find Chaney at Weekend Baby at Zoltanite here if you're going to be wanting to get in some more information as this week goes on. How have you felt as we've been trudging through these, like, now 11 weeks in a row? We're about, like, week 7 or 8 now. Got a couple more on the way.
We're toward the end, right? We're toward the end.
We're on the back half.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I think August 10th, though, there's no fights that weekend.
What? That's how we're having to justify our lives right now. The weeks we don't have fights.
Yeah. There's no fights that weekend. But then, right before that, though, the reason there's no fights is because it's International Fight Week. And I think everyone's like, I'm cashed. Oh! I was about to really be cashed.
About to be. So, it's been fun to be a fight fan right now. Really been getting at it heavy. Been trying to make some money. This is one of those, again, pay-per-views that is going to be main card heavy. We're going to get people that we really have some good information on and going to be able to
overall, for a prelim, it wasn't awful. There were some main names on it. There was an okay fighter.
There's a lot of guys where I was like, I can only fight one or two fights.
There's a couple of really great fights that could be main, like, on main cards on pay-per-views, just fight nights. Or, yeah, like,
just like this one at 185 pounds, we have Christoph Jutko.
This could be a fight of the night.
Coming in against Marc-Andre Berrault. Berrault is 11-2, losing 2 months ago against Andrew Sanchez. That was his debut coming out of the TKO scene. He's a finisher. Berrault has had a couple split decisions in there. Tends to like to be a striker. Okay, semi-serviceable takedown defense. Not tons of power. And the only reason I would say not tons of power is because if you can't finish Andrew Sanchez, getting out there, because that guy's been a chinny for a little while now, but that wrestling really ended up showing, or the lack thereof ended up showing for Berrault. He just couldn't deal with somebody putting him up against the cage. Berrault likes to stay in range. He has a good jab. We'll follow it up with a good straight right. We'll throw 3 and 4 punch combinations at time in there, and really does his best movement as a kickboxer, where if you push him up on the cage, you get him on the ground. He doesn't really try to get up off his back much. He doesn't go for submissions much. So he really just likes to stand and bang if he can. And against Jutko, the ATT prospect at 20-4, he's someone with a ton of experience in there. Coming in and beating Alan Omelovsky 3 months ago in a decision. Prior to that, though, he ended up losing TKO to Tavares, losing a TKO to Uriah Hall, and losing a split decision to David Branch. Jutko is a good wrestler, good striker. If I'm saying a good jab, better jab than Peralt's is Jutko's. The biggest issue with Jutko at times can be his fight IQ, his gas tank, and his chin. In that Uriah Hall fight, Jutko was 10-8ing Hall for 2 rounds. Literally 10-8, third round, Hall's like, damn, well, I gotta knock him out. And Jutko gassed so much that he just couldn't take the beating anymore. But Jutko has the potential to really have a lot of output in there with a lot of takedowns. And I really like that style. It's just he can push it so much that he leaves himself open to the counter in there. And Berrault has that opportunity in there. But if he's losing in his debut against Sanchez, I think Jutko is only a more advanced, more devastating striker, maybe not as good as just a clean wrestler, but enough to be able to do what he wants with Berrault. I don't really see Berrault having a spot anywhere, though it's hard for me to call this a finish. I think Berrault can stay alive in here for long enough to make it a decision, just because Jutko will be happy with staying on top and just kind of staying on top of you as a turtle and not getting off. So give me Jutko in the decision. I think this ends up staying a low scorer. I'm going to probably end up staying away on DraftKings. Who do you have in this fight and why?
For Berrault, was he totally covered in his fight where he couldn't get up, or did he have okay takedown defense?
He was more smothered on the cage, where he was just outground. He'd get taken down, would get up, but he wouldn't get off the cage, and the few swings he would have would be to defend the shot, and then they'd get stuck. It's a boring fight. It was not fun to watch
again. This is the fight that I almost feel like is the setup fight for, and you know I love a Polish fighter. But I think Judko is so chinny. This is almost set up for a guy who knocks guys out to knock him out. Everything you said made me tentative of feeling this way, but I'm going to stay with my Berhalt KO. I have it round. I'm going to change it to 2 right now and let him feel him out, but I just do not like the chin of Judko. Did we see him move up in weight, or is he still have always been 185?
Nope, he's always been 185.
I almost think this could be the setup fight, like, to make Canada hype. I can't believe they can't be setting up all these Canadian fights for losses. I agree.
I think they smart. I thought they gave it a couple other Canadians wins in there. The last two, though, maybe have had a tougher draw in there. But I like what you're saying. I can't trust Judko's IQ as much as his chin is what I'm saying in there at times.
I agree with you.
So for 8,700, the minus 175 favorite Judko on DraftKings, it's too steep. He's just never, he can go over 100 points, and he could just completely shit the bed all of a sudden. And he just has that in him. So I'm going to be super tentative on this fight in general. He's a Luke Rockhold. 100%.
He has all this skill set in a glass jaw. That's
potentially in there. And Berhalt, 7,500. I don't think you're wrong in there. I'm going to probably put Berhalt on like 10% just to give him a shot in there, because he could get that knockout. But
I don't see him getting finished.
Yeah, I agree with that. As I'm saying, I see a decision for Judko personally, but that's why I'm staying away. I think the liver play or the more advantageous play would be Berhalt in that spot there. At 155 pounds.
And who, even the person who, where did, was this in Poland that Judko won this?
Oh, I can't remember.
That would make me question it, where he won this fight, and against somebody, no offense to Alan Emadowski, I don't know who he is. And for a guy that's been fighting as long as Judko against the type of names he's been fighting, I got to think that was a setup fight for him.
I don't think you're wrong.
I don't know. Just I'm getting all conspiracy. I'm getting all Dr. Evil.
So you're still saying, how much do you think you're going to be playing Berhalt on DraftKings?
I like Berhalt. I think he's the sneaky guy that is known by a lot of people.
Interesting. I think I'm going to have him live in some of my lineups for sure. Anything left with that one at 185 pounds?
I need something that's where I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe I have a plus money puesta, but ooh, I need a fun name for it.
We could definitely spitball that one around for sure. For
that
sure,
might
for
have
sure.
To be out there. I might need a fun name. I was going to have a hype train with it being like all limp, like a sad old hype train that just can't get enough blood to it.
A rusty old hype train.
You're like, get off that. Get off that.
You're going to need a shot after that
it's
thing.
It's like.
Moving on to 155 pounds, we have Aban Mercier against Amir Tyson. Sarukian, that T always throws me off in there. Sarukian coming in, short notice. The Tiger Muay Thai prospect is 13-2. Coming in short notice, the Armenian fought Makhachev, the 16-1 fighter, and went to a decision 3 months ago. And this was one of those showings that we said, remember Sarukian. Because even in a loss, nobody wanted that Makhachev fight. He took it on 6 days' notice and had arguably a split decision. I don't think that was necessarily.
Look at that. I didn't even put it up. It knew.
Interesting. I don't know what it knew, because I'm not saying it's that one. I'm not saying that. But we have the 22-year-old coming in with solid wrestling, solid strikes. He ended up winning a Tiger Muay Thai contract for a free year of training, where Tiger Muay Thai in Thailand offered everybody to come to their gym, and someone would get free, the best prospect would get free training and food and room and board for a year. Sarukian won that. So it's been a year now that he's been there. Now he's in the UFC, but they had trust in him. Valentina Shevchenko trains there. We have a lot of people we know, Peter Yan, a lot of Russians go out there. So really interesting camp to get such hype, and there's reason. This guy looks good everywhere. And against the longtime veteran, Aban Mercier, the 11-4 fighter, is coming off his first 2-fight losing streak, losing to Alexander Hernandez 11 months ago. And then as of late, losing to Gilbert Burns in a decision 7 months ago. Aban Mercier moved up he moved down. He used to be 170 pounds. Now he's 55. He's not been eating that Denny's. He's been able to keep that weight down, but he tends to be a wrestler, grappler in there, striking very limited, out of TriStar for a while. I know he's over at H2O, but he did do cross training.
Was he at 170?
On the show, the Canada show.
Oh.
I believe. I could be wrong on that, but I feel like he was back in the day. Either way, Mercier.
Maybe they were all getting there because he fought with Elias on that season.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy to think how big Elias is, and he's fighting at 185.
But it could have been a 170 and 85 pound.
Yeah.
Right, there was multiple weight classes.
I didn't know. That might have been my first season where I just didn't know enough about what went on.
So, Aban tends to be a grappler, jiu-jitsu ace, black belt, or he was a purple belt for a while. Now I know he's a black belt, but not a bad double leg takedown. His takedown defense isn't that good. It got shown out by Hernandez in there, as well as just the pressure. The pressure of fighters have always given Aban Mercier trouble. Somebody who gets in his face and doesn't let him pick his shots at range and doesn't give him an easy takedown. Aban Mercier doesn't quit in there. I'm not saying he's a quitter, but I'm just saying that once that first line of attack is defended, Aban Mercier doesn't have a plan B or C or D. He just is like, all right, well, I'm going to keep doing this harder. And sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But against the Armenian fighter here, Sarukian, those hips looked good. Maybe I was wrong talking about them young man hips a while ago with Nardiev. Maybe I got off of it. I don't know. The eyes like what the eyes
they
like.
They kind
of
look alike.
They do look a little bit alike. So maybe I need to back off of a little bit, just like I was saying before. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. But I think that if Ismailov, who was it, freaking Makhachev doesn't submit you in there, I don't think Aban Mercier is as well. I think Sarukian can keep it where he wants it, and that's striking. And I see Sarukian being a better striker in there. Give me Sarukian. I got to finish round number 3. I know that's a little dramatic. A lot of people have this going to decision, but I think Aban just eats too much, and especially after what we just have happened in the combat community, Aban's the type of person to take that at heart. I don't know why. I'm thinking that. It just floated in my head, and I said it.
I hope Aban Mercier is doing something. To me, he only loses to guys that stifle his wrestling. Those are the only type of guys he tends to lose to, and I know everybody loves Makhachev, but whatever, like, what about if he just beats Makhachev? And he didn't. He lost, and I think he got taken down as well.
A lot. Well, somewhat.
I think if Makhachev can take you down, Aban Mercier can take you down. He's got to be playing smart, and Aban Mercier is not a guy that gets finished easily. He's fighting in Canada. Canada's not setting him here to lose, I don't think. I understand everything you're saying, and I wanted to get really high on Armin until I saw that he was the favorite. I'm kind of surprised to see how big of a favorite he
Agreed.
Is, and it makes me want to jump right off, because I think everybody's, you know, saw what we saw. This guy was on short notice and went that far with, but sometimes people just hear the short end of it. We don't know if he was training for a fight and actually was already going to fight that weekend, and they pulled him off one card to stick him on. We don't know if he was an up-and-comer that they were trying to get him on already, and he was allowed to be on juice because it was short notice and there was no drug testing there. Ooh. There could be all sorts of reasons.
Great points.
All sorts of things. But I'm going with Aban Mercier. Decision, people could even say it's a robbery, but I still think.
You're going with the local boy. I'm switching to decision. Sarukian in there, but out of the two, I think more likely the finish is Sarukian. On DraftKings, you're going to end up paying for the -230 favorite, which I agree, the line's off. It's too much for Sarukian against a veteran like Aban Mercier. You got to give him that respect in there, and that line has just been steamed too much. You're not going to be able to really be playing that right now. On DraftKings, you're going to play Mercier for $7,400. How much do you think you're going to be playing him there?
I could play both guys. I like both guys in this, and I don't think either guy ruins a card. Oh, there could be a lot of reversals. It could be low scoring.
I like Sarukian there on DraftKings a little bit more, but I will have probably 10% Mercier just to kind of hedge my bet a little bit there, but seem kind of being
I'm
the low
scoring.
I'm
debating on whether or not I'm making an emotional pick here. But
I totally agree, especially with the next one we're going.
Okay. Let's just
onto 170 pounds, we're going to have Geoff Neal coming in against Nico, the Money Man Price. Price has been a longtime favorite here at Lat B. Been cashing checks for days and days.
He is one of the OG Leslie Smith underdog picks of the week.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely been coming through 13-2. Nico Price has always been right. The hybrid needs to change it to the Price is Right, right? Like, there's no, like, that has to be his nickname. So, either way, coming in and getting a loss against Razak Hassan and Vicente Luque, but getting wins over Sylvain, Randy Brown, and as of late, Tim Means TKO, the 29-year-old's fighting out of American Top Team, fighting over with Perry and all of those guys in the Orlando scene. I see him doing tours all around Florida with Robertson as well. There's a little ATT Florida contingency going up to Canada to try to showcase in there. But with the Price fighter, we have a ground specialist on the ground who is really tricky. Once Price gets it to the ground, he likes to throw a lot of ground and pound, and that gets a lot of his fighters to react well, throwing a guillotine from interesting back angles. He'll throw that uppercut from behind the armpit that we really like here as well. But it's really just that tenacity and forward pressure that Price has is why we tend to like him here. He's usually the underdog, and it's because of that same style. He walks into you, eats a couple punches to be able to get to your hips and try to get you to the ground. Or he just says, F it, let's brawl, and is willing to take a shot, to give a shot. And his chin at times hasn't held up again in that Al Hassan fight. And this is really, really scary because this is one of my boys. I like to pick Price. On the ground, he has a distinct advantage against Neal here. Once he gets around Neal, he really can wear him out. Once Neal gets into those later rounds, it's going to be a real big problem for him as well. Neal is a two-round fighter, and he's dangerous into the third round because he's still going to have that power. Great footwork. On the outside, he does his best work. You could see those amazing finishes he has against Camacho, a decision against Belial Muhammad. And I feel like Belial Muhammad set the blueprint of how you're going to beat a Neal in there. You're going to have to eat a lot of shots, and there was times Muhammad could have gotten taken out of there. But you got to worry about that switch kick for Neal, those leg kicks. But once you get him up on the cage and just keep that grind going, he really starts to slow down. And eventually on the ground is going to be where you're going to get him. But I don't know if Price has the entries to be able to do that here. I usually pick my boy Price, but here against the power of Neal and the counter shot of strikes that Neal has, the only way that Nico Price gets him to the ground, in my point of view, is smothering him on the cage and dragging him down, or he sets up 2 and 3 chain takedowns, which Nico Price doesn't do that. So I can't count on that. So I got to go with Neal, TKO, round number one. But I think it's more Price. Live I could change, move it to two. Air. It is live change. I could go Price round number two as well, or Neal round number two, just because I'm going to give that chin a little more credit. But just like Belial Muhammad and Camacho,
I thought we were going to disagree here.
No, I just can't. I the more I talk about it, I had Price earlier in the week, but he walks into too many punches. And you can do that against Tim Means. You can do that against other fighters, but Neil's got too much power. And Al Hassan did it to him, and Vicente did it as well. And it's just heavy hitters are Nico Price's kryptonite, and we got a heavy hitter on our hands. Who do you have? And why?
I also have Neal KO. I have it too, but I could move it to one because that's usually when Nico Price likes to test his hands and stay on his feet for a little bit. I just think Geoff Neal's a little too well-rounded. And if he picked apart Belial Muhammad like I have never seen. Belial Muhammad looked like he had nothing in there. And the way that Neal worked the body, and I think that Nico Price specifically has a soft body. I could even see it being finished by a body shot or like a weird uppercut. So I got finished round two. I could move it to round one. Gosh, I like Geoff Neal everywhere. I think that he could be a linchpin.
As well. Interesting.
I might move it up.
So your heart, you don't care at all. You're like, whatever, Price. What do you do? What have you done for me lately?
I love Nico Price. I just think Geoff Neal is kind of new and on this. I doubted him against Belial. And he showed me what he could do against a grinder like that. A guy that goes three rounds without even thinking twice about it in brutal wars. And he was far superior. I thought he looked good everywhere. And I don't know what Nico Price. I think he does have flash submission chance. Yep. I think he's crazy and he gets those wild things. It's almost like Nico Price is the poor man's Tony Ferguson.
I would agree with that. Who takes much more damage, though.
Yes.
That's the hard thing.
Like, poor man. And every single one of the skill sets, a little lesser, but he has that kind of... That's what I think of him as.
Unusual
kind of
power
fighter.
Off of his back. Only fighter to ever hammer fist somebody off of his back to get a knockout that I can think of is Nico Price. But on DraftKings, you're going to end up paying for the decided plus... Or minus 200 favorite.
Price was going to be your Puesta.
It's a money play. That's a, like that, and it's not. The money's not right there. The price is not right, unfortunately.
What did you say about the stock market earlier? But it's true for betting is your money can't be emotional or what?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Can't be moral money. Like, or it can be. Yeah, you can't
let
it work.
That would be mine. Yours is moral. Don't have moral money. Mine's like, don't make your money emotional.
Don't let it be emotional. Both solid points. For the decided favorite, Neil, you're going to end up paying $9,000 on DraftKings against Nico Price of $7,200 because Nico Price is my boy and he has that potential of being a big underdog. I'm going to put him on 10% of my cards because he's the type of fighter who gets you to react. So I'm betting on every other stance I got Neil, but to hedge my bet, he's just one of these guys with a high ceiling is Nico Price for me. So I don't think he's a complete dead draw in there. Anything left with that one?
Nope.
On to the co-main event of the night. We have about at 145 pounds in returning longtime champion Christiana Cyborg coming off of her first loss in the UFC against Felicia Spencer, who just got her first win ever in the UFC at a perfect 7-0. Felicia Spencer coming out of Orlando, Florida, training at a Jungle Fight team with Mike Perry as well, all those Nicholson type characters as well. The Canadian fighter moved when she was a young 3 or 4 year old to Florida and has never looked back since. They visit every once in a while, but as far as her being Canadian, she grew up in Orlando. She won Damn Girls. So she's a math teacher by day, fighter by night. But it's actually, she's an online math tutor. So she's not one of these like full time. Yeah, she does it online.
She just needs a little extra money on the side.
Exactly. She can be in her.
That's her side chick.
She can be eating a bagel and having coffee while she's tutoring some kid online for a good amount of money. But now she's a prize fighter against probably the toughest fight, probably, I know for a fact, the toughest fight she's ever had in her life. Megan Anderson was a big step up. The Invicta champion came in and did quick work, taking Megan Anderson right to the ground, showing that she was a high-level black belt. She's been a black belt since she's been a black belt for a few years, but she's been training Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu since she was like 10 or 11 years old. She's a lifelong martial artist, and her break from Jiu-Jitsu was like Taekwondo. So Felicia Spencer is one of those mom bods in there, but definitely just doesn't cut a lot of weight. And we saw on the ground, she's got skills. She positions and advances well, slices the guard well. Takedowns aren't necessarily the best, but she will throw that overhand right to just reach around those legs. And she will step over that trip, but she'll take some half steps between.
And I hate to say it. It was against Megan Anderson.
That's the hard part, though. And then Invicta before.
Emotional with Megan Anderson. We all loved her. I think we all did collectively as a group. Us all. Like, I didn't know anyone that hated Megan Anderson. And then she came over and it was kind of like, nothing really great came out of it.
I agree.
Like, the cat, she almost killed Kat Zingano. She almost took her eye out.
That's something. That's cool. But Felicia Spencer definitely shut her down. The best thing Megan Anderson's doing right now is announcing for Invicta.
There it is.
So
I think she needs to go to Invicta for a bit.
She was the champion at Invicta forever, but there's not enough women at 145 pounds. And she can't, Megan isn't taking that Cyborg fight for all the right reasons. Against, you know what we're getting with Chrissy on the Cyborg.
She can't win that Cyborg fight for any reason. She would have taken it. She just can't seem to get a win.
True, true. She needs to, right, get a win, and then she can do that. So losing her last few ones in there. But here we got Cyborg with heavy looping punches, the Muay Thai striker, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, all-around monster in there. Comes at you a little recklessly. She does leave her chin to be hit open. I've talked about it multiple times in that Justina Bars fight in a Muay Thai battle, even against Nunes and even other people. Cyborg isn't afraid to take a punch, and she relies on that a little too much at times, and we saw it in the Nunes fight. She thought she was going to be able to eat that shot, and all of a sudden she's like, uh-oh, I can't, and more are coming. So it's just her left hook. She throws it really looping and wide, and she doesn't care to eat that shot because she knows she has so much power that most women go down. Ask Tanya Evinger. Ask everybody else. Leslie Smith, which was a quick finish. That was an early stoppage. Just saying. So,
and Amanda Nunes ate some Cyborg punches.
I would agree with that.
For breakfast. Didn't even think twice about it. But, I mean,
that's the GOAT of all time, all of a sudden. So it doesn't look so bad. But we did find out that Christiana Cyborg does bleed. She is human for now. There is routes of finishing her with the strikes if you have a hard overhand right, which Spencer throws. She throws that right hard because she's willing to follow it with a direct double leg takedown, which could be advantageous. She could get Cyborg to the ground, but I just feel like the way you get Cyborg out of there is having that KO one punch ability. If not after you hurt someone, you really have to swarm with hard punches. And I've seen Spencer do that at times in Invicta, but they just don't look like they have that much stank on them. Where when you see Cyborg, Nunes, or other ladies in there, you just see someone getting mauled. Spencer is more like that Aspen Ladd, ka 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 type of strikes. They're more rapid punches instead of actual heavy strikes where Christiana Cyborg leans into them. I mean, Spencer's got a shot on the ground as a black belt. She's proven it before already. But against Cyborg, too heavy, too strong. I think you got to hurt Cyborg first before you can finish her, regardless of where on the ground or standing. You got to hurt her. And I don't think Spencer has the type of power to do that. I'm going to say this finishes in round number two. I give Spencer a little bit of credit, but she's going to find quickly that Christiana Cyborg is a humongous step up from Megan Anderson.
Oh, if Cyborg finishes it, I think she does what Cyborg does, and she knocks her out in round one. But the kind of the thing that made Cyborg pop is the entire pressure of Nunes, which I don't think anybody else is going to do. And if you don't pressure Cyborg and you let Cyborg, women tend to be in trouble. They tend not to be prepared for the kind of power. Felicia Spencer looks like a girl that she don't mind a punch. She looks like a big chick. She's a Florida girl. I think this is actually a really dangerous fight for Cyborg. This is where I think the underdog. I have Chris Cyborg. It's only a 3-round fight, which I think we see a different kind of Cyborg open up in a 3-round fight. She's just, fighting 5 rounds. Did they strip Amanda Nunes?
Nope. She just hasn't. They haven't booked a fight yet.
I didn't see that as like a headliner on ESPN.
She's not. She still has both belts.
Okay, I thought I saw ding, ding,
ding. Oh, you could be right. It could be late breaking. Yeah, we haven't had some of that in a while.
I'll look it up in a minute. I have Cyborg. She better finish her in round two. I just think Felicia's a weird live dog here.
Agree with that. I totally agree that Felicia does have avenues of winning this fight. I don't necessarily see it in the striking.
I feel like everybody else is going to be calling her like, oh, blah, blah, blah. But I just think she's a scary Bia. And it has nothing to do with Megan Anderson's... obviously, Chris Cyborg's way better on the ground than Megan Anderson. I just think Felicia Spencer is a different type of girl. She's just a different whole type of 145er. And we're seeing, a Chris Cyborg that was knocked out. That's a different kind of Chris Cyborg.
We'll see. Is it a wounded animal? Is she going to come out there? Is it an animal in a corner, though?
I got to see her at weigh-ins, too. This is really important. I think our Instagram, we put out our cards before anyone else. And feel free, if you listen, to go to our Instagram. We always make a card for you and steal it and do your picks and just tweet at us so we know that you're putting
so
it
So we
out.
Can retweet yeah, it we'll for retweet you guys. It. 100%.
We like all your picks. It's fun. And it could sway us. I'm scrambling up to the last minute. 100%.
I'm molding. It's always, I'm fluid, baby.
So I'm going to give Felicia Spencer a little credit, too. I have Cyborg KO round two. It could go. This is a weird fight.
We both have KO round two. Just saying, that's a lap B rule around this beast that we like to tend to play up around here.
We're both giving Spencer a lot of credit.
But I like what you're saying. I think Spencer, you can put on that 10% with that Nico Price card, these couple random underdogs that'll let you mount up everywhere else. Spencer could be that type
of. If you put Spencer on a card, you can afford everyone.
Everyone else, or Price for that matter. On DraftKings, you're going to end up paying for the minus 650 favorite, Christiana Cyborg, 9,600 against Felicia Spencer's 6,600. So 10%, 5% Felicia Spencer, and then probably like 30% Cyborg, because TKO round number two, she's going to be in that 90-plus range. But she has to. For 9-6, she has to be over 90 points, or it's not even worth it to have Cyborg on there. She'll be even money, essentially. Anything left with that co-main event?
I don't have anything else to say. But between these fights, I think it's a perfect time to say it. I think I sent it to you, the question that we got on Instagram, which I think leading into this fight, I think it's like Mutato 216.
I think you might be right. Let's check it out real quick. It is right.
What's the question?
The question is, who is a more live dog emoji, Edgar versus Max or Felicia versus Cyborg? Interesting.
Said dog emoji.
Thank you for the question. Definitely an interesting one, because there is valid points for both of these guys. The main event for the pay-per-view is going to be at 145 pounds, a five rounder for the belt. We're going to have the flying Hawaiian coming in here, Max Holloway against Frankie. The answer, Edgar. Edgar is a longtime veteran, having been a longtime reigning champ, a gatekeeper now for those top three, top five type of guys. It's 23-6 type of fighter. Is coming off of a win against Cub Swanson, a decision a year, 3 months ago. But prior to that, losing to Brian Ortega. Prior to that, beating Yair Rodriguez in there. We know what we're getting with Frankie Edgar. Classic boxing, good anti-wrestling, good sprawl and brawl if he needs to, but even great wrestling. He loves an ankle pick. He loves to set up a body jab to not necessarily an ankle pick, more of a knee pick, but then he'll bump you with that as well. He really is versatile. Again, I'm always boasting about Jack Slack. He has another fun little piece on just that little in-between spot of Frankie Edgar and why he's consistently always a tricky guy in there. So Edgar can go five rounds easy. He's always got that type of output. A great little left hook with a straight right hand that comes down the middle and catches a lot of people. I mean, you can't sleep on Frankie Edgar. Even in that Ortiz or Ortega fight, it was a fairly quick finish in the, what was it, first round or so. It's a fading Frankie Edgar, and I wouldn't put too much credit in Ortega, especially after we saw him in against Max, his hands. But we know what we're usually getting with Frankie Edgar, and that's just going to be a solid all-around high-level top five competitor in there. A lot of people didn't want this fight to happen because the decided fight is Volkanovski at 145 pounds, right?
Frankie kind of lost his spot. I understand the people that are arguing for him, that he kind of got skipped over. And I almost don't even feel like Volkanovski, he kind of just should sit back for a minute. It's kind of quick to me. Even though I feel like he's hot. What did he leapfrog in three fights and get all the way to the champ? You get to fight Max Holloway in three fights?
He fought by Chad Mendes.
Who's Chad Mendes? He just came off retirement. That's how I feel about it. So it's like almost, I think Frankie deserves the fight more. Now that I even just said it all in my head, like fighting Chad Mendes does not get you the title. Fighting Chad Mendes, a guy who literally just retired and came back from a drug suspension, beating him doesn't get you the title. So I think I want to see Volkanovski fight somebody else anyway beforehand. Give friggin' Edgar the last shot at the hoorah. I do not want to see him get picked apart in there like we saw Max Holloway or Jose Aldo get picked apart the second
Ortega.
But that's what I think's going to happen.
Yep.
I think he's going to get picked apart.
We've just seen the incoming champion, Max Holloway, just lose at 155 pounds. But before that, he was on a hell of a winning streak. He moved up in weight. It didn't work out with for him against Poirier. But hey, this is a guy that we do got to watch those weigh-ins. Max, especially now, the older he's getting at 27, into those 30s now, it's just... I know Dana says, oh, he's small for a 55er. Yeah, fucking right. At 5'10", he's small for a 55er. It's just, that's the name of the game. Weight. He hasn't, but it's just something that I'm going to be watching out for against Frankie, who's, again, 5'6", doesn't it's have to worry about it as much.
It's F-up time where he tried to make weight with Khabib on short notice. That's...
There's been issues. There's been
it.
Issues.
But it was like he tried to come in... out like, you know, what, 7 days out and save a card or something. It was kind of a ridiculous ask on his body. So, you know, he's never been not prepared otherwise.
True. As far
and
as...
And they cut him. He didn't stop. He did not make it. They told him he wasn't allowed to.
Very true. Good point. And then there was even those neurological issues. But either way, he's coming off of a devastating loss.
They never figured anything else. There was never a neurological issue. They never figured out anything about it. Everyone just was like, he's acting weird.
So, other than acting weird, in his last fight 3 months ago, he got in a fight where he was in probably the hardest fight he's ever been in. It's the most trouble we've ever seen the champion. Most trouble we've ever seen the champion in there. So this is a big step up. We see what type of person Max Holloway is. But luckily for this young man, we've been seeing a lot of good stuff in general, just the way he kind of manages his life. He doesn't have weird strippers accusing him of any weird grabbing situations. He's always been a champ, a good father figure, and handles things as a professional all the way around skill-wise. I mean, he's got everything to be a hassle for Frankie Edgar. Good takedown defense, good submissions. Off of his back. I mean, in general, wherever you want to take the fight, Max Holloway will get there and keep throwing punches.
Is he good on the ground at all?
Yeah.
That's where I was most nervous for him altogether. I think he has an ground game. Good with his hands.
Yeah. Good. Great takedown defense, though.
Great takedown defense.
So it's hard to get him down there. We definitely don't see him on the ground much. He likes to keep it kickboxing in there. So as far as the angles and striking, I think that this turns into a kickboxing match. I don't think we see it go to the ground all that much. If we do, I see Edgar trying to land those knee picks and Holloway eventually reading them. I think that Holloway could play a big game with the kicks here on Edgar. And once you start to slow Edgar down, especially in this advanced age, I think, as we're saying, we see him pull away like the Ortega fight, and it just turns into a brooding one-sided beating. They're both Americans in here, so we don't get a go Canada versus America. But Toronto has specifically made Holloway one of their own, holding up a jersey in their auditorium. So he's a honorary Canadian, so he's been self-proclaimed.
Because it's the 10th Island, baby.
So do you think that's going to play a role against the Jersey boy himself?
I don't think we have to worry about it going to
I actually agree with that, because I think it's a TKO round number 5 or 4. For Max Holloway.
I got round 3. I think he does it a little quicker. For some reason, I think Frankie Edgar loses to Jose Aldo handedly. So when I do my
We've never been able to beat him.
Yeah, and then I think that Brian Ortega losing to him like that and making him look that good. I don't like this fight. The only thing I don't like about Max going into this is 3 months ago, the battle he was in.
That's right.
And unless Edgar can emulate that, which I don't think he can, I still think everyone is kind of sleeping on Dustin a little bit and how well he's put his skill set together. I think Dustin might be that much better than Frankie Edgar. Like, you know, to think about, I know they're in different weight classes, but I just don't think Frankie's going to be able to put that kind of power and combinations together to put that kind of pain on Max Holloway.
I totally agree with
that. So I just think Frankie Edgar slowly gets picked apart here. And if Brian Ortega can put you to sleep, I think Max Holloway can pick you apart. So I think that is what happens.
So to answer a fan's question here, I would say the underdog that is going to be more likely to have a shot out of both of these underdogs, both of them being Frankie Edgar and Felicia Spencer. I think Spencer is the one who has a better shot there. As far as DraftKings, though, who do you think can score more?
For the how expensive they are and the odds, I like Spencer better. If I'm going to put a dollar on one or the other, or 10, or like if whatever my blow of money is, I would put it on Spencer first for getting $9 over putting it on Frankie for $4.
I agree with that.
It's more fun, too.
It is a little bit more riskier in there. On DraftKings, you're going to end up paying. Because
it funds the question. It just, Frankie Edgar is not the answer.
Truth. He's methodical in there. Methodical. On DraftKings, you're going to end up paying for the minus 400 favorite, Max Holloway, 9,400 against Frankie Edgar, 6,800. Again, I see if you're going to give anybody that type of money, might as well put it on Spencer because she's going to have the shot out of the two, more so.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. If it goes long, though, points-wise on DraftKings, Frankie's if it safer. Goes into the... If you want to play safe where you're like, okay, this isn't going to squash my card, put Frankie. But if you're trying for first place.
First place, it's Spencer.
Yeah.
I agree with that. So, anything left in this pay-per-view, we ended up doing it. We had 12 bouts in Canada. We're going to America's Hat to try to take over. Americans are going to be showing up. Canada's going to end up seeing if they can get the last laugh. Is there any Twitter?
Did we talk about John Jones?
I mentioned it a little bit. If you've been living under a rock, you haven't heard. John Jones has been out there grabbing pussies everywhere. He's just trying to be presidential.
Could just be some trifling stripper trying to get that dollar.
What? You're telling me that they are unscrupulous people in strip clubs?
Either one of those things could be possible. John Jones could be grabbing pussies or it could be a trifling stripper. I would put my same amount of faith in both. Maybe more faith in the stripper. He probably grabbed that pussy and slapped that A.
I probably agree with that.
Anything else, though? I don't know.
I don't think that I have anything off the top of my head. Be sure to be here for the morning after. It's going to be pipe. Pumped. We're going to have a ton of information. We got embeddeds coming out. We have all sorts of information.
And
so
if anything cuckoo goes down,
stay tuned.
Sure you better like and subscribe and hit that bell and follow us on YouTube because sometimes that's easier for us to get out a quick video. So just saying.
That beep.